The National Alliance rehabilitates the white man's soul one at a time. What happens after that is just up to the white man. We're a race of individuals. There's more variation in the looks of the white men than of any other race. And what all we have to do is recall, as the National Alliance helps us to do, our heritage. We know that we are the inheritors of the great classical musicians. So we are free not to listen to popular music, not to listen to rap, and we can feel good about doing it. That way we educate ourselves and then we enjoy Wagner and Beethoven and Bach and those white musicians, those European musicians who actually give strength to the soul. So that's one of the things we do. As far as political candidates are concerned, David Duke is an excellent example of a man who should be president. And we have other extremely good white candidates that we're looking at. But we know, after looking at what happened in communist Russia, that we are looking at a formidable foe. We know that the Jew did murder 65 million of us in Russia, and we aren't going to let it happen again. We see from Hitler's example that you have to be careful when you're fighting the murderous, deceiving Jew. So we are careful, and we will survive this time. If we weren't able to save Germany, we will save the United States of America. And we'll do it using the white man's tools. The tools of reason, exclusive association, gentleness, and only force when necessary. For instance, the National Alliance teaches us that if things happen as they did in Russia, you can be sure that what the Jew is doing now is taking guns away from the white man and furnishing guns to the black man. He's doing this by forcing the registration of guns so that only the criminals can have them. That means that we're seeing the ghetto Negro getting more and more guns, whereas the intellectual white is being denied guns. So the white man is confronting that reality and is arming himself and herself and taking lessons in gunsmanship and going to the police academies here, you know, locally, and getting instruction from the police and getting ready for what we believe is a race war that will be triggered by the Jew. Because clearly, since the Jew wants to destroy the white man, the best way to do that is to do it the way he did it in Russia, which is to sick the black man on him. But thanks to the National Alliance, we will be ready for that. We will not fight aggressively. We will not start an action. But when an action is ready, we will be ready, and we will win, because we are white. I want to address the silliness of Negroes talking, complaining about being beaten and hung in 1750, when women were still being burned at the stake in 1792. I think you have to take a look at these crimes against humanity against the backdrop of history. If Negroes were slaves, and if it was legal to beat slaves, then what's the big deal? Don't you think it's a little bit worse that women were being burned alive at the stake for, quote, causing men to have involuntary erections, unquote, which was proof of their demonic witchcraft powers? I think the whole thing is silly. I think we're past that, and we should just completely forget about it. We were living under a different rule in those days, in the 1700s. As a matter of fact, if you're at all interested, historically speaking, the Malleus Maleficarum was written by two Jews, a guy named Jakob Sprengler and Wilhelm Kramer, at the behest of Pope Innocent VIII. A Jew-inspired Catholic Pope. So I just think we need to stop focusing on the victimization of the black man, unless we're going to put it into historical context, which means we have to notice that women have also been victimized, and just grow up, get out of that whole sadomasochistic game, and start living like reasonable human beings, free of the influence of the Jew. The Jew who teaches that it's appropriate to torture people who are criminals and then define criminals as witches. It's all too silly. I think that if we magically got rid of the blacks and the browns in the United States, we would magically rid ourselves of 80% of the violent crime. And that has to be a good thing. The quickest way to get closest to God is to get rid of the blacks and the browns. It's obvious. God has chosen the white man, not the Jew, to carry his message of peace. We know that because in the white communities, there is peace. In Iceland, for instance, where they have the least amount of natural resources, but they have one thing going for themselves, which is that they are all white, they have the highest per capita income in the world. How do they do that? They do that by being white. White is right. White is godly. The Jews have sold a bill of goods to superstitious Christians when they convinced these superstitious primitives that God blesses he who blesses the Jew. Nothing could be farther from the truth. God hates the Jew. God blesses he who blesses the white man. That's the true meaning of the scripture. Jesus was white. Adam was white. Noah was white. Abraham, this terrible man, Abraham, was not a white man. Abraham sacrificed his own son on an altar to God. Had it not been for the intervention of an angel, he would have done that. That's who that disgusting, filthy Jew, Abraham, is. You have to keep your races straight if you're going to understand the historical characters. Furthermore, written history did not start 2,000 years ago by the Jews. It started 3,700 years ago by the white pharaohs in Egypt. The Jews, who were running out of money because for some reason there weren't any more grassy plains for the goats to find, which meant that the goats couldn't lead the sheep who were leading the Jews from grassy place to grassy place, just left the Jews high and dry with no place, no way to find any goats to get cheese out of or sheep to get wool off of. They didn't even have woven cloth, these Jews, back 3,000 years ago. So they went to Egypt for jobs. They call it slavery because that's what Jews do. They always whine and bitch and moan and exaggerate their suffering. But the truth is, they went to Egypt to get jobs. They got jobs under the Pharaoh. They learned how to write when they noticed that the Egyptians could write. They came back when they were sick of working. They call it a miracle that they were allowed to get freed by their vicious, cruel slave master, Pharaoh. But the truth is, they got sick of working. They went back to Israel because I guess the rain started and there was some more grass over there. And then they wrote their history. And in their history, they eulogized this person, Abraham, thinking nobody would notice that Abraham was sacrificing his son to this demonic god of hatred. And this concept they had that if you torture your own child and slay him, God's going to give you a big present because God loves that stuff. They think they can't be seen, but it's so obvious that these Jews are all screwed up. If you look at Samuel, 2 Samuel chapter 13, you'll see a description of King David getting up on the bad side of his bed one day because one of his children died of a disease. So he sent his warriors out to the Ammonite cities and destroyed them all. And he took over the Ammonite cities, and he made the whole city of Ammonites, men, women, and children, walk through ovens while still alive and burn themselves to death. That was King David's idea of a good day. Then these Jews go to decent, law-abiding Germany with the white damask tablecloths and Mozart and Wagner, and they expect us to believe that Hitler had ovens? That's simply racial memory being projected onto a totally innocent, upstanding group of people, the Germans. Germans who are white people and aren't involved in torture and killing and sacrificing of humans and animals and didn't have to follow sheep who followed goats. These Jews want you to believe that everything's exactly the opposite of what it is. They want you to think that the decent, civilized Germans are the barbarians and that they, the barbarians, are decent and civilized. People have got to wake up. White women, even young white women, are very, very compliant and obedient and will follow directions. So it's very important for the white parents to instruct the white daughters to stay only with white young men. Right now, parents, white parents, are reneging on their responsibilities and allowing the television and the Jew-controlled media to instruct their daughters, and the daughters are very dutifully doing what they're told to do, what they're modeled on MTV. They're going out with black men. But that can stop very quickly as soon as white parents take responsibility and explain to their white daughters that the white gene is recessive. It took God a long, long time to make the white man, 2 million years at least. And those genes are delicate and complicated. The impressive raised frontal lobes of the white man didn't come easily or by accident. They were carefully designed like a very complicated, beautiful building or painting. You can't mix something like that with such refinement, such complexity, such sophistication with a brute and expect to have those white genes pass through. They won't. That's what we mean by recessive genes. It's not a level playing field when the white man mates with the non-white. The fact is that the genes are recessive and they get lost in the mixture. And the chances of producing a white baby are only 1 in 8, whereas the chances of producing a black and brown baby, black or brown baby, are 7 in 8. Now, those are very bad odds. And so far, thanks to the control that the Jew has over the country, they've kept the study of genetics out of the school system, so white women have not even known how to choose their marriage partner based on what they would be likely to pass on to their children. And what's the most important thing you give your children? It's not money, it's not even education, it's not even culture, although those things are all extremely important. The most important thing you give to your child is his body. You want your child to have a healthy, beautiful, white, intelligent body. Then he can make it on his own. If he has what he needs genetically, he can make his way in the world. It's more important than money, culture, or even love. But our school system has deprived the white man from knowing the truth, which is that if he marries a non-white, his children will not be white, and they're very likely to carry genetic diseases, from which, thank God, the white man is entirely free, because the white man is blessed by God and by nature. We do not have genetic diseases. So it's very, very wrong for a white person to marry anyone but a... Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mona Montgomery with this night's edition of The Holohoax. We've been talking about the lies that the Jews have been telling, that there were gas chambers when there were not. There was no Jewish soap. There were no Jew skin lampshades. But what's most important is the way the Jews have lied to us about our own culture, our own morality. So this is what I'll be discussing tonight. The white man's identity, the importance of the white man knowing who each other is, knowing that the Hispanic is not white, the Jew is not white, and a coming together of the white man for the white man so that he can fall in love as he's meant to do in the highest spiritual way, find his own true love, the angel of his life, and for the women, the angel of her life, so that they can live together in peace behind their white picket fence, raising their beautiful children, and finally dying, having found the greatest joy that love can offer, the gift of being loved and loving in return. In today's Village Voice newspaper, there's an article that says that the Jews are going to sue IBM for having provided Hitler with IBM materials like card punches, You know, the cards and the little key punch machines that enabled the Germans to keep track of the Jews when they entered them into the prison camps and sent them here and there. And I think it's a great giggle, because what we saw recently was about 10 years ago, these same Jews sued the country of Switzerland for having bullion gold that they had purportedly taken out of Jewish teeth. And Switzerland, being a conservative country and not wanting to go to court if it's at all possible, settled out of court for, I think, billions of dollars, costing the Swiss treasury a great deal of money. But they just figured, you know, pay them off and let's go on with our lives here. However, the investigation went forward even after the settlement, and it was discovered that the Swiss did not have any money that belonged to Jews and had not saved the gold out of Jewish teeth. And in fact, there were no accounts that were being hidden and held money that ever belonged to any Jewish families. So that became a scandal that's now part of everyone's common knowledge, that the Jews screwed Switzerland 10 years ago and screwed them bad. Now we have the Jews suing IBM, only this time I think we're come. This time we're going to have IBM lawyers scrutinizing the information, and they're going to find, I'm sure, that there were no gas chambers, and I think it's going to be a hoot. Well, I think this lawsuit is going to be a real hoot, don't you? After all, now, after suing Switzerland and suing this company and suing that company, and the tide of truth swells, the wave of truth swells higher and higher until it's becoming a tidal wave, here comes IBM, the virtuous and the righteous American company, who's going to take their shot at these liars. And it may be IBM, it may be another company, but we know what's going to happen, and I'm personally taking great delight in it. Look, what has to happen now is that the litigation process, the American litigation process, is going to start taking effect. There are going to be interrogatories, there are going to be notices to produce, there is going to be an investigation, and there's going to be a big hole in this investigation when they try to find gas chambers. So the question will be, did IBM contribute to a crime? That will be the question, and the answer will come up, no, there was no crime. And the wedge of truth will make itself known in the American psyche, and more people will start to understand that the Jews lied about the gas chambers. And I think it's just going to be a total hoot.
Right here, right now.
There was no organized plan to exterminate the Jews. There were no gas chambers. Without a murder weapon, you don't have a murder. Not one single corpse was autopsied that showed it had been killed by gas. It's a lie, guys. You're not going to win. History is going to find you out, and you're going to go down in humiliation because you are lying. It doesn't matter how sophisticated the lies are. It doesn't matter how many laws you pass to make it illegal to question the lie, or how many people you boot off of the internet or turn into their local bar association or have drummed out of their local city council, because the truth is a powerful thing, and the liars are going to be defeated eventually. The bigger the lie, the more important the truth. We may have in Hitler a great prophet, judging by the amount of lies and energy that have been used to defame and malign him. Hitler is the man who has had the second most number of words written about him, second only to Jesus Christ. How do you become a man of that magnitude? not just by being an innocent bystander. There's a kernel of truth underneath this story that we're going to find out. But on the way to this truth, and that by that I mean the true character of Hitler, who I am convinced is historically the number one enemy of the world's worst regime ever known to man, which is communism. And for that reason and that reason alone, he's a wonderful human being. But on the way to discovering that important truth, we're going to uncover the true, hideous, demonic quality of the Jewish imagination, who could, number one, make up lies this demonic, and number two, implement torture and murder and jail time against anybody who questions their demonic lies. You see, you didn't have a factory type of death-killing machine in Germany, like you like to pretend. Germany was a fairly, in fact, it was a superior culture. It was a high culture. It was a sensitive, artistic culture. But the barbaric Jew, this goat herd following monster from the ancient of days, right to be classified right with the sub-Saharan Negro, he is so jealous of the beautiful music and sculpture and refinement that came out of the high German culture that they must spit upon it like the Negroes that they are, like the monkeys in the cages that put their hands up their rectums and grab real shit out of it. And I'm talking about the truly mad ones, and hurl these pieces of shit at the crowd in angry madness. It's madness the way the Jews have attacked the Germans. And they will be found out. And they will go down to dusky doom, because history will have its way with them. They will be devoured. They will be hated like no other people have been hated, because their crime is worse than any other crime that's ever been committed. Remember, if you commit slander against a man under ancient law, you are punished with the punishment that the falsely accused would have been punished had he been guilty. The Jews are going to, they are earning for themselves the punishment which they have tried to make us visit upon the head of Germany. But it's not going to fit on the head of Germany. That horrible crown of thorns will be removed from Hitler's head, and he'll be crowned with just the average laurels that grace the head of any generous philosopher. But that horrible, mechanical, hideous punishment is going to fall on the head of the Jew. I am a very proud member of the National Alliance, which is a group that promotes the interests of the white race and can be accessed at www.natvan.com to listen to their weekly broadcast on what it means to be a proud white person facing white people's issues, most notably the problem of the imminent extermination of the white race if white people don't come together as a group and promote white marriages to produce white children. This week's discussion at www.natvan.com is entitled "Who Are We?" and it defines the white race in a way that can be understood by most of us. Basically, it just boils down to who we are is who we know ourselves to be. We recognize each other just as much as the black man does, who can easily see by another black man's black kinky hair, black dark complexion, smashed in nose and thick lips, that this is a black man. And all of the people that look like black men are black men, are black, and they know they're black. For some odd reason, the white man has never had that sense of who they are, so we actually have to construct it now. And we are noticing who we are. There are three types of Aryans: the Nordic Aryan, that's the blondest; the Mediterranean Aryan, That's the darkest. And the Alpine Aryan, who is sort of in between. The Alpine Aryan hangs out in Spain and France. The Mediterranean Aryan, you can find him in Italy. And the Nordic Aryan, as you know, is to be found in Germany and the Scandinavian countries. We have basically a symmetrical type of face, not a big nose like the Jew, or a totally rounded head where the features sort of blend in to the basic spherical shape of the head. We have refined, defined features. And above all, we have a recognizable soul. We are honest. We are calm. We're not given to impulses. We're not given to rages or particular emotions because we are intellectual. And of course, the underlying differences are that the ones that you don't see until you open the skeleton are that we have 20% larger frontal lobes and our cranium is half as thick and things like that. So I am a member of the National Alliance, but that doesn't mean that I don't support the KKK. I definitely do. I support the KKK because out of all of the groups in the United States history, they have been the strongest and the most steadfast group fighting against communism. Communism is the most evil regime ever to be placed, ever to be constructed in the world, in all history. The death count is higher than any other regime. In Russia, the communists killed 65 million ethnic Russians, that means white Russians, in order to implement their regime. They had to basically destroy the entire nobility, aristocracy, royalty, professional class, the officers in the army, the doctors, the teachers. Everyone had to be killed, the lawyers. And that came up to a death count of 65 million before they could implement their totalitarian rule. In China, 35 million people were killed in order to destroy the upper class of China. So I'm very, very much supportive of anybody who stands up against communism because communism is intrinsically evil. It is the Antichrist, and their death toll proves that. In America, the one group of people who have steadfastly fought against communism is the KKK. And you can see that by looking at their history. If you'll notice, when they go out and march, it's always the communists who dog their steps and start the violence by throwing bricks at them or pulling guns or anything like that. And we know it's the communists because the men all have beards and the women all have sensible shoes and wear no makeup and have short hairstyles. And they are violent people. And yet the KKK goes on and has survived, and I think it will be an important force in the future. So, yeah, here's to the KKK. The KKK and the neo-Nazis have a great deal in common, and I would hate to see anything destroy the possibility of their becoming friends. I don't know. A white person. And that simply has to do with genetics, and that needs to be taught from the parent to the child so that the children will not marry non-whites. White women, even young white women, are very, very compliant and obedient and will follow directions. So it's very important for the white parents to instruct the white daughters to stay only with white young men. Right now, parents, white parents, are reneging on their responsibilities and allowing the television and the Jew-controlled media to instruct their daughters, and the daughters are very dutifully doing what they're told to do, what they're modeled on MTV. They're going out with black men. But that can stop very quickly as soon as white parents take responsibility and explain to their white daughters that the white gene is recessive. It took God a long, long time to make the white man, 2 million years at least. And those genes are delicate and complicated. The impressive raised frontal lobes of the white man didn't come easily or by accident. They were carefully designed like a very complicated, beautiful building or painting. You can't mix something like that with such refinement, such complexity, such sophistication with a brute. and expect to have those white genes pass through. They won't. That's what we mean by recessive genes. It's not a level playing field when the white man mates with the non-white. The fact is that the genes are recessive and they get lost in the mixture. And the chances of producing a white baby are only 1 in 8, whereas the chances of producing a black and brown baby, black or brown baby, are 7 in 8. Now, those are very bad odds. And so far, thanks to the control that the Jew has over the country, they've kept the study of genetics out of the school system, so white women have not even known how to choose their marriage partner based on what they would be likely to pass on to their children. And what's the most important thing you give your children? It's not money, it's not even education, it's not even culture. Although those things are all extremely important. The most important thing you give to your child is his body. You want your child to have a healthy, beautiful, white, intelligent body. Then he can make it on his own. If he has what he needs genetically, he can make his way in the world. It's more important than money, culture, or even love. But our school system has deprived the white man from knowing the truth, which is that if he marries a non-white, his children will not be white, and they're very likely to carry genetic diseases, from which, thank God, the white man is entirely free, because the white man is blessed by God and by nature. We do not have genetic diseases. So it's very, very wrong for a white person to marry anyone but a white person. And that simply has to do with genetics, and that needs to be taught from the parent to the child so that the children will not marry non-whites. I think in China there would be no problems with a 60-year-old Chinese woman getting up and asking the Chinese young ladies and gentlemen to please stay true to the Chinese race. I don't think in Japan my voice would be considered antisocial. I don't think in any of the black countries it would be considered psychotic for an elderly black woman to caution the black youth against mixing outside of their race if they want their grandchildren to look like their grandparents. That's all I'm doing. The thing that is so hard for people to accept is that America is a white country. And that has to be made very, very clear. This is a white country. We still have 70% majority. And the majority should stand up for the needs of the majority, or the culture will disappear. We can't allow the minorities to decide what kind of music should be played, or whether the TV in a general hospital should be a Spanish station or an English station. It has to be an English station, because we are an English-speaking country. We have the right to our English language. The majority cannot permit the minority to rule. That's chaos. If the minorities want to come into our country, they must conform to us. We don't conform to them. That's what a culture does. It stands up for itself. It demonstrates through example what it is. That's how you teach. You cannot teach people, that I'm aware of anyway, except through example. And if the white man wants to spread the light of civilization to the world, he's going to have to do it through example, not by buying his way into other countries and trying to get them to turn over their culture to ours for the money. It won't work. The only way we're going to spread the light of the white man's culture is to be white men and preserve our own culture. Those non-whites who are interested and attracted to our culture can emulate it as they wish. But we cannot force them to accept us. On the other hand, we certainly can stand up against them when they invade our country illegally and attempt to force us to conform to them. That is really idiotic. The white man really has to examine his moral values and decide whether he wants the society to be run by the lowest element or the highest element. Unfortunately, the white man, being the highest element, has a sense of embarrassment and shame and guilt because this chasm is so wide between the upper-class white man and the low-class black man that the white man feels guilty. But he has to get over that sense of guilt. He has to understand that the black man never had it so good as when he gets a chance to look at the white man and see how the white man conducts himself and apply some of those lessons to his own life. For example, the first thing a Mexican wants to know when he comes over the border is whether or not it's okay to use birth control because he's tired of working three jobs. And yes, it is. It's okay to use birth control. In fact, it should be mandatory. But the blacks and the browns know nothing about this. So what we need to do is show them how it's done. And if they want to learn, they can get on their computers. They can look at us through photographs, and they can see how beautifully we live and study how it's done and apply it to their own cultures. But they can't come into our culture and bring us down. That would be wrong. I have to use my common sense. If there was one famine, there was probably a lot of famines. It was probably pretty common for the Jews as well as the sub-Saharan Negroes to migrate up to the more advanced civilization of the Egyptians in order to get jobs during famine time. Coco, if you key up again, I'll give you the numbers. In the meantime, I'll just keep talking because Coco does sound like he knows what he's talking about. Let's always remember that Abraham was about to slay his son Isaac on an altar to God, so that we can place him socioeconomically in his rightful position, which is at the level of about a sub-Saharan Negro who did the same kind of things. These are not developed, kind, enlightened people. And I consider Coco extremely kind when he calls them nomads. They were the lowest form of nomads in that they followed sheep to get the wool from the sheep, who followed the goats because the goats were smart enough to figure out where the grass was. So they, and we have the same kind of people today in sub-Saharan Africa. They call them herders, but they're not herders at all. They follow herds of animals in order to have some connection to life. Now we know that the Jews also were practicing bone magic or dream interpretation or magic or whatever you want to call it, a very low level superstitious form of worshiping God. And I frankly doubt that the Egyptians were very heavily into this necromancy or whatever you want to call this type of witchcraft, because building pyramids requires reason and thought. It wouldn't be likely that people who are on the level of looking into the entrails of chickens are probably going to be able to put two and two together and get a pyramid. So what I maintain is that the Jews have, as usual, lied about their history. And parenthetically, I want to point out what Coco says, which is that they are exactly the same as the Arabs, and they always have been. There's no difference between the Jews and the Arabs. This is something they did to themselves. I think when they came back from Egypt and they had been enlightened by the pharaohs in that they learned about monotheism, they probably learned about writing, and then they came back and they thought they were better than everybody else, and that's sort of how the Jew started his attitude. But he really didn't have a right to be so arrogant. He had just come out of a existence where he was sacrificing his children to God and practicing this really low-level superstitious magic. So, I think that the important thing is that they were not enslaved at all. They came for jobs. They complained about it naturally. You know what Jews are like. Oh, I had to work. I was a slave. I was beaten by my boss. They obviously, people on this level, cannot possibly defer to authority. That takes civilization. But the one thing I wanted to point out was the importance of Pop's question. His original question was, how did the Jews get over to Egypt since they claim it was a miracle that they got back? Isn't it more likely that the tide just went low and they went back and forth quite a bit during a few thousand years when they were sheep-following nomads who couldn't do anything more creative to get a job than follow animals who followed animals. These guys were not very creative. So I suspect that they could get over there. It wasn't that hard. Probably the tide went down, the tide went up, the tide went down. They came and went more or less at will many, many times. And, of course, carried the story about, oh, we were enslaved by Pharaoh. Oh, we are the most enlightened people. Oh, we have the great gift of witchcraft. Oh, we are so holy that we sacrifice our sons to God, and he makes us the ruler and the king over all. I mean, get a grip, people. How did the Jews get from Israel to Egypt, crossing the Red Sea? You need to press down on your talk button, Coco, and then, oh, you don't know the answer to that question? Okay, well, we need to find out, because however they got over there, if my theory is correct and there was no coercion involved at all, nobody can hear me? Well, I'll finish my sentence. Can I? Oh, okay. My theory is that there was no coercion involved, that the sub-Saharan Negroes, as well as the Jews, who were basically on the same level of lifestyle, went to the pharaohs, who had this advanced civilization going, looking for jobs during times of famine. And that, although they are depicted with whips, etc., and we, in our modern way of looking at things, they would be called slaves, that's how bosses treated their workers, their migrant workers. But that doesn't answer the question that how did they get over to Egypt, because however they got over is probably the way they got back. And this silly story about the miracle, etc., is probably not true. And we need to know what was going on with the Red Sea in those days to tell us how these guys migrated back and forth from Israel to Egypt. The difference in cultures can't go unaddressed. The Egyptians were building magnificent architectural structures, while the Jews were following sheep who were following goats. Now, you have to take that into consideration when you read the writings of the Jews that make them appear to be superior to the Egyptians. It's impossible. They couldn't have been superior in any way, shape, or form. They were maggots. They were just one tiny step above cannibals. They were sacrificing their children to God in exchange for favors. These are not enlightened, superior people. The Egyptians had mastered architecture to the point where they could create the pyramids. This is a magnificent accomplishment, and it must require all kinds of understanding of mathematics and physics, the ability to manage huge staffs of manpower. So when you get the Jews coming back from Egypt, writing these stories about how they basically saved the Egyptians with their uncanny ability to read minds and interpret dreams, you have to look at it in perspective. And what you should see when you see that kind of bragging is people who are like today's gypsies, who carry their little candles around with them and their incense and their abracadabra and their hoodoo, and just realize these people are completely confused. So they're going to come out of any experience claiming to be the great Bahui and complaining about the cruelty and the barbarism of everybody else, because they're the universal victims, the universal pills or wimps. And so everything that they say about themselves is going to be to try to raise up their self-esteem in the face of the fact that they can't even figure out how to weave cloth, and the Egyptians are building pyramids. It is no longer necessary for us to have civilizations crumble and fall. It's not true, as we've been taught, that civilizations have a lifespan, that they are born, develop, reach a zenith, and then fade away into oblivion. This doesn't have to happen anymore now that we've learned the root cause for the destruction of all of the great civilizations on the planet, which are, for example, Rome, Greece, and Egypt. In all of these cases, the architecting of these societies, the engineering of these societies, was done by white people. And what happened when the society reached a zenith is that the white people did not understand the recessive quality of their genes, and they started mixing with their slaves. In the case of Egypt, this was particularly devastating to the white genetic structure of the pharaohs. First, we have pharaohs that are long and slender, with blue eyes and the beautiful stretched neck of Cleopatra and others. She looks like a Greek woman. It would clearly a lot of Anglo-Saxon blood in her. And then later, you see how the bloodlines descend, and you have sand monkeys running around in Egypt wearing headdresses like pharaohs. So you know that what happened is that the white aristocracy mixed their blood, mixed their racial heritage with their dark slaves. And that is what has been bringing down these magnificent civilizations. It doesn't have to happen anymore. Once the white man realizes that he destroys the future of his children by interbreeding, this will stop. Am I the only one who notices that this black homosexual male who talks about oppression and swallowing is projecting his own sexual degeneracy onto his view of the world? Surely there's no one more oppressed than a male black homosexual, and his speech reveals that. Focusing on the problem of swallowing stuff. You know, Bullet, you ought to stop swallowing. You really, that's a good way to start. If I can just get sexual degenerates to stop swallowing, I can get them to get in touch with some of their, just enough of their inner soul strength to say no to all of the other oppressive things that they're allowing to have happen to them. Because that's what that is. It's oppression. Horrible oppression. To have to swallow jism is the most humiliating form of subjection and oppression that we know about. And that's why it's so commonly practiced. It gives degenerate people a sense of power. And for the victim, it does nothing but erode the integrity of the soul. No, lady smiles, there's nothing lovely about swallowing jism. It's a horrible, degenerate practice. And it's only come into fashion since the Jew got control of the American media and started convincing people that the Jewish way of having sex is the proper way. Before the 60s, when the Jew took over the media and started promoting all of this race mixing and these horrible Freudian concepts, white people had sex in the context of marriage with people they loved. And the last thing a man would do would ask his wife to do things he couldn't even pay the lowest prostitute to do. I'm not brainwashed, Lady Smiles. You are. You've been brainwashed into believing that doing things that humiliate your soul are sexy. But what you're doing when you enter into relationships or a relationship with a member of the opposite sex that's based on your ability to perform as a machine is you deface yourself entirely. You don't even have a chance of being loved. The Jew doesn't understand this because he doesn't have the capacity for love that the white man has. The white man's capacity for love is seen in his architecture, his music, his poetry, his literature, his sculpture, and his paintings. This is how we know that the white man can love, in spite of the fact that people want to tell you that squatting down on the dirt with a tin pan or something and banging it on a rock is just as beautiful as Beethoven's Passion of St. Matthew. I mean, it's disgusting. It's so poor. It's so wrong. We know the white man can love because we've seen his great works of love. We know the Jew cannot love because he has produced nothing. And yet, for some reason, you would rather listen to the Jew teach you about love than the white man. You would rather believe that it's more loving to swallow cum than it is to sit looking as attractive as possible and sharing your best thoughts with your partner. You just have no concept of what it's like for a man and woman to get together and exchange loving discussion. You can't do it. So you despise the white man who has a capacity that you don't have. Whereas if you wanted to progress, you'd be glad to see that there's a better way to live than swallowing cum. You'd want to know. You'd want to do what you could do to better yourself, just as everyone else does. But when you have it all topsy-turvy, when the poor rule over the rich, that's when true oppression takes place. That's when you're not allowed anymore to progress. It becomes a sin against humanity to want to better yourself. And the whole progress of society goes downward so that we all end up cannibalizing each other and worshiping a God that gives us favors in exchange for the tormented cries of our sacrificial victims. And none of us create anything. We're all diminished to having to, as I said, eat each other or scrape a few grains of rice off of some rice paddy if we're lucky to stumble into one. That's what happens when society gets turned upside down by the communist Jew. The rich man is subjected by the poor man, and that's the end of civilization. Some people think that it's loving to have zero standards of behavior, zero standards applicable to art and science. They feel that it's hateful to want to be better than you are or to want to help other people better themselves. That's not the definition of hate. That's the definition of love. These people who call racists haters are the true haters. They hate progress. They hate education. They hate comparing and contrasting different cultures, different races. They're incapable of all kinds of discrimination of thinking. They can't distinguish between variables. So they believe that the most loving thing in the world to do is to just glaze your eyes over and accept everything as all perfect and wonderful. But that's not loving at all. It's the opposite of love. It's brainwashed and stupid. Love is not brainwashed and stupid. It's focused, alert, and it knows very well what it's looking at. Let me explain how I connect up sexual degeneracy with the Jews. I start by looking at German culture during Hitler, and I see that Hitler did not allow his soldiers to rape women on the battlefield, which distinguished his soldiers from all of the other soldiers in World War II. I see Hitler teaching women to remain virgin until they're married, and then to remain faithful to their German husbands for the sake of the German children. I see a very high culture, a very elevated, creative culture, where morality, sexual morality, was the order of the day. It wasn't oppressively taught, it was just accepted. In my own life, I went to an all-white high school. There was only one girl that got pregnant in all of the 6 years that I went to that high school, and she came in from another high school. The Jews, the blacks and the browns, led by the Jews, think, as Freud seems to have taught, that mental health comes from sexual licentiousness. And in the interests of sanity, they promote the most horrible sexual degeneracies, which in fact demoralize the female. They don't elevate the female at all. The female is already at a disadvantage because she's not as intelligent. She doesn't have the aggressive urges. She's not as driven as the male, and thank God for it. We need soft, feminine people in this world to take care of our children and to bring happiness to the men. The men don't want to spend all of their lives going out and struggling and fighting on the battlefield of life just to come home and be treated to mechanical sex. They want a friend. They want a soft, loving woman who looks up to them and makes them feel good about the work they've done all day, which they did for her. This is normal. This is sane. Sexual degeneracy deprives the human race of the very essence of its strength, which is love between the male and the female. In order for love to take place, the female must be elevated at least to the position of an equal partner intellectually during the time that they're together. She must not be degraded down to the level of the lowest prostitute, or she will not be able to communicate with her husband, because deep down inside she will naturally hate him for what he's done to her. And she can't fight him. He's stronger than she is. He leads the household. It's up to the man to stand up for morality. It's up for the man to restore to the woman her dignity and put down these vile homosexuals that demonstrate through their conduct and through their speech that swallowing cum is the right, not the wrong thing to do. It is the wrong thing to do. Anyone who promotes swallowing cum as a step on the path to enlightenment should be executed because of the damage he's doing to the psyche of the human race. That's why homosexuals have traditionally been subjected to persecution. They have been correctly hated because they bring down the moral tone of the universe. And they're horrible, vicious, wicked people, like the person that we were hearing from recently, who is clearly a homosexual and wants to destroy capitalism. Well, of course he wants to destroy capitalism. Capitalism is civilization. He is a demon. The homosexual is a demon, and he needs to be sent back to the hell from whence he came and not allowed anywhere near civilized people.
Sure.
I think the homosexual has an obligation to account for himself. I don't think that homosexuals should be allowed to be in elevators with heterosexuals smelling like shit as they do, with the breath that smells like jism. I don't think they should be allowed to be near good people. I think it's right and normal and healthy and natural for heterosexuals to refuse to accept homosexuals. Homosexuals are disgusting. They have sex by putting that part of their body that's supposed to be used for inserting cum into a woman so that she can produce a child, or to give her pleasure so that he can keep her in his life long enough to produce those children, or if they can't produce children, do the next best thing, which is to produce love between each other. That's what that odd little body part is for, that funny-looking little piece of plumbing. It's not supposed to be sticked up, put up into another man's poop chute, and have shit put all over it, and then not even cleaned in the interests of preserving the memory of their love. Or it is gross. What homosexuals do is incredibly gross. That's why we never, ever talk about it. And that's why they get away with their horrible practices, because they're so horrible that decent people don't want to talk about them. It's homosexuals who invented oral sex because they can't do it the normal way. And when a man asks a woman to perform this hideous act of putting filthy plumbing into her mouth, which is supposed to be used for sharing ideas and kisses, he defiles her not only with bacteria and humiliation, but by forcing her into the position of a male homosexual. You think sex isn't important? You think sex doesn't have something to do with our essential nature? It has everything to do with it. People who are clean sexually are clean in every other way. People who are filthy dogs sexually are filthy dogs in every other way. Just as we see these strange, pirouetting, shiny black hominids lisping and mincing and talking filth and supporting their filthy practices, we see from these same strange beings sermons that, if we paid any attention to them, would result in the end of civilization. They want to tear down capitalism. They want to tear down civilization. They want to graffiti up all of the churches, museums, and castles that the white man has built. They want to make everything filthy. Everything. And if you don't believe me, go to the bathhouses and see what it smells like. And see what it looks like. See what homosexuals do when they're left to their own, especially the black homosexuals. You won't believe how much dope they have to ingest in order to completely eradicate the last remnants of humanity so that they can perform those disgusting sex acts. You shouldn't have to have your penis sucked in order to have sexual gratification. If you limited yourself to only having sex with your spouse, you'd find that after 6 months of honeymooning, you would become one flesh, and you wouldn't have to do strange mechanical things to each other. You'd be complete. The man would have sex with his wife, and they would come together naturally and easily. You don't even understand that anymore. You've completely lost the whole vision of sex. You don't understand that marriage is becoming one flesh with another person and going through life together, loving each other. That's beyond your imagination. So in order to make up for the deficit, you keep inventing more and more extravagant mechanical means to simulate sex. But it isn't sex without love, and it isn't love without marriage. So you're doomed. You're doomed to eternal frustration, and in order to make yourself feel better about your state of damnation, naturally you're going to drive away any voice of sanity that tells you you're wrong, because it's too much for you to bear. You know you're lost. You know you're beyond redemption. You can never face another member of the human race from a different sex with any kind of calmness or serenity until you go through some incredible repentance and absolution for the hideous crimes you've already committed against yourself and others. So rather than go through that process of becoming wholesome, you just drive away anyone who points out to you the horrible depravity and emptiness of your life. I just feel sorry for anyone who's never heard of normal sex. When a normal man and woman fall in love, they tend to become lazy. Something comes over them. They can't support their weight anymore. They need to sit down. Then they put their arms around each other, and maybe she leans her head on his shoulder. They have to relax. The force and the power of the love attraction almost overwhelms them, and they have to sit down together. And eventually that even comes into a laying down position. And then they turn to each other, still talking, still in love, and they make love. But it's beyond your understanding, it's beyond your imagination to understand the simplest thing about sex. So you continue to try to make up for the deficit, or at least depraved adults continue to make up for the deficit in their lives of not having any love, by trying to focus on the genitalia and finding ways to stimulate by mechanical means some sense of feeling, even if it's just a physical feeling, to make up for the fact that they have no emotion in their lives. And that's tragic. That's the end of their life. That's the end of all meaning in their life, all connection to reality, all love. But what really is bad is that as they have to increase the mechanical stimulation to their genitals in order to eke out that last little sense of any feeling, eventually it's hopeless. They can't find any feeling. So then they have to look for vicarious mechanical pleasure, and they focus their attention on the young and the virginal, and they deprave and destroy the youth of the next generation. And it goes on generation after generation. And that's why these people should be executed and put to death, because they don't just stop with destroying their own bodies. After they have finished with their own bodies and gotten all, finally come to the horrible conclusion that it's impossible to derive any genuine pleasure through this mechanical means, they need to turn their attention onto the innocent generation that's coming up and destroy that generation as well. That's what makes them so horrible, and that's why this type of sex should be against the law and should be punishable, as it has been always throughout history. You know, I'm starting to get some insight into why so many black people love communism. It's because it takes the focus away from the reality of the differences in the races. The mantra of the black communist is, don't focus on race. Don't notice that sub-Saharan Negroes are so uncreative that they've never had a written language or invented the wheel and lived in mud huts until white people brought civilization to them 500 years ago. Oh, please don't do that. We are not a race. We are merely a class. And the only reason we're poor is because greedy white people have made us poor. Not because we lack creativity or intelligence. Forget our lack of frontal lobes. Don't pay any attention to the fact that our cranium is twice as thick as the white man's cranium, since there's no need for any room for our tiny little brains to move around in. We are genetically and physically inferior as a race, but please don't talk about that. If you said that, however truthful it is, you are a hater, and we are entitled to punish you under the state-imposed religion of multi-ethnicity. It isn't a racial struggle. It's not significant that white people had castles, museums, and churches, while black people were cannibalistically eating each other up because they were so lacking in creativity they couldn't even grow their own food. That's irrelevant. We are simply poor. Poor us. Poor us! And we turn to the Jew for our guidance, the professional victims to end all victims that will teach us how to get things by poor us. Don't notice that we are ugly and vicious and vile beyond belief and rape 3-month-old, 8-month-old kids because our witch doctors tell us to, instead of using the filthy white man's condoms to protect us against AIDS. It is a class struggle. Race has nothing to do with it. By the way, this communist chatter who is gracing our presence tonight is not only a Negro, but a particularly skinny, shiny Negro who is of the homosexual persuasion. So that will tell you a little bit about his ideology. He who does not believe in God, he should wish there was no God when he realizes what the God of heaven will do to the likes of him. Not because he was genetically inferior. We all have our little problems. But trust me, this man has cooperated with his demon to the point where he will absolutely deserve all the punishment that God lays on his shoulders for his foul deeds. Well, that's it for tonight, folks. I hope I was able to enlighten you slightly as to how important it is for you to keep your all-white bodies clean and pure so that you can enjoy the greatest gift life has to offer us, love between a white man and a white woman. Until next time, this is Mona Montgomery signing off from the Holohoax. See you next week, same time, same station.